Well, good day and welcome to another episode here of the Disaster Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and I'd like to welcome all of you here to the program this week. We've got a great subject we're going to be digging into in detail over this in the next few podcasts, I suspect. But before we get to all of that and to get into the meat of the show, it's always great to welcome my esteemed co-host, Sam Bradley. Sam, how are you?
I'm great, Jamie. We're doing no disasters out here in Northern California this week, so I'm happy about that. And yes, I'm very excited about our guest tonight and the discussions we're going to be having. But first, I want to say hi to Dr. Joe Holly, our regular guest who we love very much. And he'll be introducing the guest that he brought in with us tonight. So we're going to be looking forward to talking to him. Hi, Joe.
Well, hi, Sam. And hi, Jamie. Great to be on again. Sorry I missed you guys last episode, but it's good to be back.
It's great to have you here. And Joe, you brought a friend with you to be on the show tonight to talk a little bit about hostile MCIs and products and services that are available to assist with that. You want to introduce him for us to the audience?
Well, I'd be glad to. We're pleased to have Bob Otter on with us from Kingfisher Medical. And Bob, say hello, and we'll be chatting some more as the session goes on.
Thanks, Joe. It's great to be here, and Sam and Jamie, I'm honored to be your guest tonight and looking forward to hearing all the good things we've got to talk about. So thanks again.
Well, it's great to have you, Bob, and thanks for taking some time out of what I'm sure is your busy schedule to come on the show tonight and join us. We've got some things to talk about, though, in the news, and I just wanted to, we'd always try to touch on current events that are going on. And right before, a couple days before we started recording this episode, we had an eruption of an active volcano in Japan with multiple climbers and hikers on the slopes of the volcano when it erupted. So there's a bit of a search and rescue, and I guess at this point, a search and recovery effort going on out there.
Yeah, that's really scary. It makes you think of those disaster movies, but they honestly do have active volcanoes still out there. The thing I haven't figured out is how it wasn't that much of a surprise that it was going to erupt. So I think that's a topic we might want to look at a little bit later and dig into that some more. I think it's fascinating. What do you think, Joe?
Oh, I agree completely. It's was quite a surprise, apparently, and certainly strikes me as rather unusual, especially after the commentary and conversation we had after the earthquakes in California not too long back about the early warning systems, et cetera. But they've apparently got quite a few folks missing and quite a few injured and killed in that event. So pretty substantial natural disaster there.
Yeah, and that's a... I was just going to say that's probably a USAR mission that Joe hasn't conceived of being on, a USAR mission of a whole different kind there.
Wow. Well, you know, you're exactly right. I have not I've had an awful lot of training or experience involving volcano related disasters.
Well, they're talking about walking through knee deep volcanic ash.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Just a few pictures I've seen, it's phenomenal the amount of dust and ash that those things put out, and they absolutely will bury you very quickly. They're very much like a landslide.
Yeah, not to mention breathing it.
So we'll have to maybe look and see if we can talk a little bit about volcanoes in a future episode and some specific types of things, maybe even talk to somebody that's had some experience or has some background about something like Mount St. Helens here in the U.S., where we had a similar surprise eruption. I know, looking at the news on this particular story and an article that I found, and I'll link to this in the show notes, they do have an early warning system in this volcano, but none of the early warning signs were detected. This was a complete surprise eruption. They have like cameras that statically measure the dome on top of the volcano so they can see if it starts to expand, showing pressure underneath. They have seismic sensors around. And what they are pretty sure happened was that this was a hydrovolcanic event, which is where the lava came in contact with a sudden source of water. And it was the vapor, it was the water vapor that caused the eruption.
Wow.
So
interesting.
We'll have to do some research on that.
Yeah, just a lot of stuff. So just wanted to touch on that story for you. That's not our topic for today, but I wanted to mention it since those of you listening to the show are interested in these topics and they come up. And so I want to make sure we bring them out for you in here in the show. But now it's time to get in and talk a little bit about Bob and Kingfisher Medical and some of the things that we're learning about hostile environment mass casualty incidents. We're going to be talking about this for this and probably the next couple of episodes, because this is just a hot topic right now, and it's something that we need to be worried about and concerned about how we're going to respond, how we're going to train appropriately for these things. And Joe, I'll let you take it from here.
Well, thanks, Jamie. I was actually the reason I wasn't on the podcast last week is I was in Reno, Nevada at the National Association of State. The National Association of EMS Educators annual meeting. And I was lucky enough to be in a fairly high-level board meeting, which had an awful lot of our federal partners from National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Homeland Security, and others in there. And I can tell you the absolute dominant topic of discussion is active shooter events, and particularly in the way that EMS, police, and fire respond to those events. So we've talked in the past a lot about the new approach on getting EMS into the warm zone, getting access to those patients very quickly, doing so under and with the cooperation of law enforcement, et cetera. You know, we've been training folks that way now for a couple of years, but it's pretty clear at the highest federal levels, there's still a lot of concern about how quickly this new paradigm is spreading. And I think the concern is it's not spreading nearly quick enough for the concerns that that were voiced by the feds. So, it's all about, of course, trying to get the EMS providers in to take care of patients. We have a very short window of time. We have a large number of patients. And I think what's absolutely vital is two or three things. One is we've got to get that cooperative and conjoint effort with law enforcement done very quickly. We've got to get EMS folks in to take care of patients, identify those folks very quickly, deal with those life threats, and then tag those folks and get them out to definitive medical care. And the part of the reason I wanted to get Bob on tonight was Kingfisher has done a great job in sort of pushing that to the forefront and putting together some products that I think are phenomenally valuable for EMS folks to be aware of and look at and utilize in moving that new approach forward. And so, Bob, if I can, I'd like to just sort of turn it over to you for just a minute, let you kind of give us a 1,000-foot view, if you will, of the product that you have, and then we'll talk about that a little bit more detail as we move on.
Sure, absolutely, Joe. And, it's interesting. I mean, we talked about, we call it the sort of the post-Columbine era, and it's hard to believe it's been 15 years. But, we looked at my own department as a 20-year fire service veteran and EMT. We looked at ways that we need to approach our own communities, how we would respond should this happen here. And it was sort of sitting back and sitting around the table and evaluating what would we do now if it happened tomorrow. And I think it's, law enforcement post-Columbine has completely changed the way that they respond as a whole to these types of incidents. And no longer are they sitting back and waiting for tactical teams to methodically sweep a large building. Those first patrol officers are now going in immediately towards the sound of the booms. And these incidents on the whole are ending much quicker than they did prior to 1999. And so that is allowing EMS the ability to get in and quickly get these patients out in what may or may not even be a warm zone. I mean, it might even be cold by that point, but you just don't know it yet. So communication is the key. And so when we talk about command silos, a lot of EMS agencies and fire departments weren't even aware that their police officers were doing things differently than they had before. So it's starting communication at the most basic level and then wrapping into that scene level, which is so critical, and allowing our medics to get in. So we have created a a product, and which is now quickly spawning onto a line of products that just basically tackles those three key elements, which is immediate communication with law enforcement, allowing teams of medics to rapidly go in with just the equipment needed to rapidly treat those viable patients, and then some specialized devices that are designed, actually military-grade, very lightweight drag stretchers to get those patients out quickly to definitive care. And those three things are really all that's needed, and if we could figure out a way to put them in the same spot and make them intuitive and user-friendly, that's what we set out to do.
Well, and I think you've touched on it beautifully. It was certainly clear from the latest updated data from the FBI, et cetera, that the length of time for these events now is even shorter than it was before, and yet the death rate or the wounding rate per minute is higher. So in essence, what's happening is we're hurting more people very, very quickly. And the events are ending very quickly, but it's all the more important based on that EMS and law enforcement, of course, can't stand around waiting for the SWAT team to show up and the guy with the tank and et cetera. That's absolutely absurd and totally unacceptable. So, that key piece of getting those law enforcement guys in there chasing after the bad guys, or and then getting EMS and law enforcement in there right behind that is absolutely vital. And I think you hit on it quite nicely. We talk about that going into the warm zone, but if you really look at that data, it's not really a warm zone. It's only a warm zone because we can't 100% guarantee it's a cold zone yet, but it's not that it's unsafe. It's just that we can't completely confirm it, but we're pretty sure, and we're sure enough that we could get in there and take care of those patients with a very large margin of safety based on law enforcement protection. So, I think that getting things rolling with law enforcement, that cooperative conjoint effort is absolutely vital. And then, of course, once EMS is in the scene, you've got to identify those patients very quickly. You've got to administer that life-saving stuff. And what I really love about the Rover product, which is the one to me that's absolutely made for the violent emergency response, which of course is part of the product name, is the ability to do that very quickly. Get organized with law enforcement, go in there, start tagging people, do your stuff, and not only incorporates the life-saving medical interventions, but also methodology to get those patients out of there very quickly. So, Bob, give us a little bit more detail, if you would, about the Rover itself and kind of what's in there and what each of those three components are all about.
Absolutely, Joe. So the Rover stands for a clever acronym, if I do say so myself, for Rapid Onset Violence Emergency Response. And everything's got to have an acronym in our business, but that is what Rover stands for. And basically, that's what we see these incidents is exactly what they are. It's rapid onset violence. It's complete normalcy in any town USA turning into absolute horror in a matter of seconds. And so we thought it was an appropriate name. And what the Rover is if you can imagine a hard case, similar to a Pelican. It's a Pilgrim case that is, you open up and the inside lid is a command module that is pre-set up as two whiteboards, one on either side, automatically filled out already with all the cues you would need for a hostile NCI. So there's sketching on one side and incident information and number of patients and so on and so forth. And the other side's a control board where the incident commander or whoever's in charge at that time, maybe the initial incident commander, can start filling out information, basic objectives, who's in charge of what, radio frequencies, number of known casualties. Because remember, these law enforcement officers, they're entering the scene immediately upon arrival, and they're on the street already, so they're going to be there before EMS. And EMS is probably initially going to stage for a couple of minutes. These officers already have a heck of a lot of data that they're bringing outside on their radios. So they're saying, we've got four patients right inside the foyer and two in the back room and so on and so forth. So whoever's standing there with the patrol sergeant, whoever's in charge in law enforcement, is just writing this data down. And it's allowing, as the command gets more and more structured, that information to be relayed on. On the inside are communication logs. And so say, for example, you need to be intrinsically safe and because of an explosive threat and you can't use your radios, there are pads that, again, have all those cues right there for you, as well as resource whiteboards. So there's going to be a lot of people coming. We spent a lot of time talking to our partners at the FBI about this product, and one of the things they talked about were incidents where there were 30-some-odd law enforcement agencies at some of these incidents that really self-presented. They weren't necessarily even on the run card or called in. They were just local metropolitan agencies that showed up on the scene. So you've got all kinds of resources that are called for, and then others that aren't called for that just come to help. And those need to be, you know, mitigated and figured out who's who. And it's a very confusing and complex incident. So there are all kinds of things inside that command module to help you with not only the command functions, but patient transport, receiving facilities, and so on and so forth. So anything a commander might need is in that inside lid. And then when you open up the case, on the bottom of it is going to be treatment modules. And so we have we give the customer the option of having four individual first aid kits, or IFACs, which is a concept that, you know, came to us from our friends in the military who've been doing it right a long time. And those IFACs contain just the bare necessities to stop a life-threatening injury. So hemorrhage control with tourniquets, pressure bandages, airways for obviously maintaining a patent airway, and then also a chest seal. So if a customer wanted to have for their protocols needle decompression, we certainly could add that as well. But that is a, you know, all of your TCCC guidelines are basically covered in those IFACs. And then if a patient or if a customer wanted something more than that, to treat more than, say, just one patient per IFAC, we have what's called the RISC kit, which stands for Rapid Intervention and Sort. And so it allows people to do either ribbon triaging through specialty pockets on the outside, but then on the inside are those same types of medical treatment, you know, that medical equipment inside, but just in greater quantities. So each RISC kit can treat between 4 and 5 patients as opposed to just one. And so that covers the treatment module. And then for the transport, or for the evacuation side of it, which is also in the case, we have two Extract 2 devices. And the Extract 2 is actually developed for the British military and is deployed. One out of every 4 soldiers now in the British military has the Extract, and it's being trialed by our military over here. And it is a size of a bread loaf, so it's very small. It weighs less than 2 pounds. And it is a device that can be easily rolled out and cocoon a patient via a bungee system. So a medic can put a victim in there in under 30 seconds, and it's cinched down with drawstrings, and then has a drag strap. And so it can either be carried by several different handles on each side by multiple personnel, but a lot of times we don't have the luxury of having a lot of people on scene initially. So one medic could drag a patient out very easily, and it's made of a very durable material that's a ripstop in nature, so you don't get any big punctures or anything in it. And it's just very practical for this application. It almost looks like it was designed for it. And it's, like I said, weighs very little and can easily be brought in and out. So basically, that's the rover. You've got your command, your treatment, and your extrication all in one. And we also have 2 commercial grade transport devices in there as well, patient movement devices. The mega movers are in there. So it's got pretty much all your bases covered, and we see this, and, you know, not necessary for every ambulance, but certainly every command vehicle across the country. And it's easily deployable, and you can train with it, put everything back, and then put it into service for use, which we thought was important as well.
I like the extrication device. I'm looking at it actually as you're talking about it. I went and found your website at kingfishermedical.com. So those of you that are listening to the show and have a computer nearby while you're listening and you want to check it out, you can do that. We'll have links in the show notes, of course. But, you know, that Extract 2 is quite a nice device, just from looking at the pictures and the description of it. I like the concept of having all of these things in the rover in one place, so you can treat the patient and then get them out of that warm zone to definitive treatment on the scene and eventually to the hospital.
Absolutely. And if you look on that website, on the landing page for the rover itself, there's actually about a 7-minute video that really brings the product to life. And your friend Dr. Holly there has a bit of a cameo on it. So there'll be certainly a friendly face on the other side of the screen. But it is a great video to show. And if you, for example, we've already gotten a lot of calls. The product was just released this week, but we've already gotten a lot of calls from customers who have said, hey, we need to explain to our councilmen or our mayor or our city council exactly what we want to spend this money on. And that video really brought it to life. And so we're pretty happy the way that turned out.
I have to tell you, I need to talk to my chief. I don't know if you're familiar with the term rescue task force, but in lieu of the longer trainings or the TCCC style trainings, our fire department is doing like an intensive 8-hour, one-day training with the police agencies called Rescue Task Force, and much of what we described earlier, where the whole idea is for the cops to learn how to surround fire, and fire learns how to kind of be cocooned within that as they go into the warm zone, identify victims, and take care of business, basically. And this is amazing. I mean, I wish I'd known about this a few weeks ago. This would be perfect.
The rescue task force model. I'm sorry, Dr.
No, go ahead.
That's something that is literally sweeping across the country right now. And again, we love our law enforcement partners. I say that from, I'll take off my Kingfisher Medical hat and put on my, fire captain hat, and we're good friends with our law enforcement partners. But you know what? Other than auto accident scenes where we'd be on the side of the highway with them, jawing and talking about each other's families, we didn't really do a lot together. So it wasn't that, you always hear people, we don't play in the same sandbox nicely. That's not the case, at least in our end of the world at all. It's just we didn't train with them because we didn't really see a need to. But this type of incident and these types of occurrences that are happening are bringing fire and EMS and law all together, and these rescue task forces are exactly, the force protection concept is exactly what's doing it, and we're seeing just incredible successes from those people that have adopted it. I mean, it really is phenomenal.
Yeah, I've been really impressed, and I think that's one of the things that's, there's always something good that comes out of something bad, and I think you nailed it in saying for the first time, fire and EMS and police are seeing the need to work together, to train together, and to be on the same page, and that can only be good, not just in active MCIs, but in a lot of situations, and I think it's about time. It's sad that it was forced into this by these kinds of incidents, but now we've got it. Now we're better prepared for it. And I don't know, maybe you have a better sense of how many departments are looking, working on this rescue task force concept or others. We seem to be the only ones real locally, but I think it's starting to catch on in other departments in our area. So I'm hoping that that's more widespread across the country. What do you think, Bob?
I think it is definitely, you're hearing more and more people talk about it, and I think as these hostile MCIs are unfortunately, gaining, we're seeing more and more of them, you're at a lot of the national trade shows and the regional trade shows even, really good speakers from, the federal government and state government and folks like Dr. Holly are talking and addressing the issue, and you're seeing light bulbs start to go off. And I think the more people like Dr. Holly and those that are experts in the field are talking about it, you're really starting to get more and more, local and municipal and regional areas start to jump on board and really see the benefit of training with law enforcement and being that much better prepared should an incident like that happen in their community.
And we have our local experts, both from within fire and from within police, our local agencies, and they're the ones who do the training for everybody else. And so that's worked out really well.
Well, I think, this is Joe again, I think what I really like about this product is it works well on two different levels. It's exquisitely well organized as a tool to get the folks on scene organized. Here's the component for the interoperability piece. Here's the warm zone medical treatment piece, and here's the evacuation piece. It's all right there together. It's laid out beautifully. And And because it's so nicely done, it provides that structure that I think is vitally important to get folks talking to each other and saying, we got to get going. We can't stand here and figure out how we're going to do this. It's all right here for us. Let's go. And then when you actually get ready to go do it, you have not only, you know, patient identification stuff in there, but you've got the patient treatment piece of it as well, and the extrication from the scene piece of it. So literally, you know, in my case, an EMS lieutenant or supervisory personnel pulls up on scene, pulls out the box, opens it up, and boom, here, passes the stuff out, and, you know, we're ready to go within a minute. And that's really what it's going to take to get this stuff done. You've got to have that pre-packaged, as it were, all in a single spot, ready to go. I know, you know, we've talked about the idea of developing a, you know, hemorrhage control box that goes on the wall next to the AED at the mall or the theater or whatever, you know, to be able to respond to one of those events. But this is of that same concept, just portable, and actually also incorporates not only the treatment phase of all of it, but the management phase as well, which is absolutely vitally important to get it done and done quickly.
So, Bob, I was thinking the one thing I really like about that, because looking at all the equipment that we've used in training for this, this is something, and you made that point earlier, and some of the stuff I've been reading saying that these incidents can last as long as 12 minutes, but 37% of them last about 5 minutes, and I think that's the point Joe was making, is they happen quickly. The first boots on the ground people that get there are the ones that are going to have to mitigate this thing. So if we have to wait around for a command vehicle to show up, it's going to take a while because they're not always right there. But these, what I like about this rover package is it's small enough, you could put it in a number of vehicles and make it more available so you could get it there more quickly and get people going on saving lives. I'm impressed with that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think those numbers are really, when you dive into them and you think about how quickly these scenes on average are being mitigated, and we like to think in EMS that we're on the scene, you know, well, we're there by then. Well, realistically, we're not. You know, I mean, if we'd like to say we're inside of 4 minutes to a scene, but that's not the national average as it may be in, you know, across the country. And so, you know, a huge percentage of the time, these things are mitigated before, either self-mitigated or mitigated by law enforcement, before EMS even arrives on the scene. So it is, if you can have those tools there quickly and start gathering information and go in and get these horribly injured people out quickly into definitive care, you know, just very simply, more lives will be saved.
Well, and the way we look at it, there's two goals. One is to stop the killing, and one is to stop the dying. And, of course, law enforcement, as you said, are the ones that go in and stop the killing by taking out the bad guys. But if we're not right behind them with tourniquets in our hands, we're not going to be able to save a lot of lives. So
that's beautiful.
Kudos
said.
To you.
You're right.
Well, folks, you know, this topic is something we could probably talk about quite a bit, and we decided to break this into two segment episodes. And Sam and Joe, we've let Bob go since we've recorded this, but we wanted to kind of break this into two episodes. Really a great topic, Joe, and just it was something we just needed to keep talking about.
Well, I agree completely. I am very passionate about our approach to that, and I think it's absolutely vital that we get this information out and let folks know that there's some great tools out there to help take folks into this kind of brave new world that they haven't been in before, that it's just another environment we're going to have to get comfortable in.
Yeah, and I think you guys have a good strong part of that. The way you guys handle the education and the training with Paragon Medical Education Group, you all do a good job of helping people really get, I guess you're never going to get comfortable with this topic and this type of response, but at least you have you're better prepared.
Well, absolutely. Yeah, you certainly won't ever get comfortable with it. You hope you never do one, or at most you'd only do one in your career, but I think it's the same sort of approach you have to take, just like you do with disaster medicine. You know, they're pretty uncommon events, but they're pretty bad when they happen. And the better prepared you are, the better you're going to perform under those circumstances.
So where can folks find Paragon on the web if they want to bring you guys in to maybe do some of this specialized training and education in their system?
Well, you can reach out to us on the web at paragonmedicalgroup.com. We're going to be trying to get some updates on the website here pretty soon, but this active shooter approach is definitely something that is kind of our primary focus of training in the foreseeable future for sure. You can also find us on Facebook at Paragon Medical Group, and our Twitter feed is ParagonMedEDU.
Fantastic. And Joe, we just want to thank you again for all the things you do to support the Disaster Podcast here at disasterpodcast.com. And we could not do this show, literally, folks, without the support of Paragon. So you need to head over, check out their websites, friend them on Facebook, follow them on Twitter, and really get locked in with what they're doing over there and talking about. Because when the opportunity comes up, this is definitely one organization you want to bring in to do some specialized education in your community. So, Joe, thanks a lot again for all you do to help us put this show out.
Well, thank you, guys. It's a pleasure to work with you.
Sam, where can folks find you?
Well, in the usual social media places, Facebook under Sam Bradley, Sam Bradley 11 at Twitter, and certainly on the disasterpodcast.com. And I couldn't agree more with what you're saying and Joe's passion behind this, and it evolves so quickly. Every week there's just so much new information coming out about that, and I think it's a topic that we'll really need to continue to explore, because there's something new every week, either a new event or some new information. So I think we really should be on top of it. Where do they find you, Jamie?
Well, they find me under the handle PodMedic in most places on social media out there. So friend or follow me there. But always you can find me over at disasterpodcast.com. And we want you to be an active member of that community. And part of that activity isn't just listening to the show. We want you to comment back about the show. So head over to disasterpodcast.com. On any of the articles there, there's a comments area below the page there, a link or a box, and you just fill in your comments there. Or maybe you are a subject matter expert like Bob or like Joe that has something you'd like to share about disaster or austere medical response. Please let us know, and we will get back to you. I mean, this is the community effort here. So if you have a topic, if you have a suggestion for someone we should be interviewing, whatever the case may be, get out there and become an active part of our community. It's really important that you do that. You know, Sam, we could talk all night about the different things we've learned already from Bob, and we're going to be coming back next week with the second half of this episode. But already we've really learned that with these hostile intruder incidents, it's just, you know, it's still another form of disaster medicine.
It is, and as we well know, disaster medicine is not our everyday medicine.